Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. So our next guest not only is an incredible physical therapist, but he posts so often in his bare feet. And there's a reason for this. And there's a reason in our very first podcast we ever had with him, episode 2, if you haven't gone and listened to it. But in that episode, he talks so much about how people need to kick their shoes off and walk barefoot more so throughout the day, especially when they're at home, because those shoes are prisons. They keep our feet locked up. And you know how often we talk about getting Vivo barefoot shoes on your feet so that you can free the space within those toes, actually allow the foot to function the way it's supposed to without the extra support. Our foot doesn't need that extra arch support. We've been conditioned to believe that it does, but we have the ability to build up the strength of our foot, the mobility of our toes, so that our foot can actually work naturally without having that external support. So if you haven't checked out Vivo barefoot shoes yet, we really encourage you just to grab a pair. It's not something you have to live in, especially if you're not used to it and your foot hasn't, you know, worked up to it yet. However, just having a pair on hand so you can go on a short walk or maybe just a short grocery trip, some way to just build your foot into this place of gaining strength, mobility, and access into your entire body. This is going to be the shoe. We love Vivo Barefoot for so many reasons beyond just what it does for your foot. It's a great company. And if you haven't checked them out yet, go look at the link in our show notes. There's been a code change. Use code OPTIMAL now at checkout to get that 15% off. The code is OPTIMAL.
Kelly, so grateful to have you back in. Thanks for coming to chat with us again.
Always a pleasure to sit down with two big brains who are, making things better. It's really fun.
It's really fun, I think, especially because you were actually our very first episode with a guest.
First interview on the podcast.
Okay, so I'm so embarrassed because I probably set the bar so low that everyone right. after was like, oh, this is going to be easy. I'm so glad to be back. Congratulations.
No, I mean... We love having you back. And honestly, you kind of like set the trend because just some of the themes that were woven in your first interview, like I always find us going back to or getting brought up by new people that come on. Like one major one, we need to be able to teach people to do their everyday maintenance on their bodies, on their minds. And that was just resonated through your first interview so much. And I love how that's kind of been a theme of a lot of people that come on. Like, how can we better educate the people in our world so they don't feel so freaking reliant on outside sources for their health?
Yeah, isn't that the truth? You know, what my whole only meager skill set is I'm really good at pattern recognition. It's probably what I'm sort of best at, but my own brain works on, I need to make sense of what I'm seeing. How does it relate to everything else? And I think we're at a zeitgeist where people are figuring out that maybe our traditional models aren't serving us as well anymore, and that we're going to have to rethink about who owns what and what is skilled care and what can we call unskilled care, so that we can actually say, hey, look, maybe you don't, as a physical therapist, have to go get an ISTM, you know, instrumented assisted scraping, you know, tool certification, when you can teach someone how to make themselves feel better with a spatula at home.
I mean, that's huge. I mean, and we talk about this a lot on the podcast in terms of what these things are actually doing and really getting people to feel more empowered to do the things themselves. You know, I mean, that's the goal, not to rely on someone to feel like that's fixing you, but how are we really guiding someone?
There's a lot there, isn't there? Because, you know, that's on the one hand, as in our medical field, professional coach, we love to feel like our athletes, like, you know, your athlete, if they're texting you to ask you what you need to eat for dinner or what they need to eat for dinner, like you're sort of failing them, not teaching them how to fish mm-hmm. or how to swim, right? Mm-hmm. And the same thing is true where, you know, we came out of a, you know, I think this physical medicine field, pain has been around forever, of course. And the physical medicine field is relatively new. You know, we were still figuring out cholera not that long ago and, you know, taking the pump handles off. And here we are, you know, with a relatively new field. And some of that is just a normal expression of the system, settling out, saying, well, who owns what and how, you know, how can we empower people? And there was definitely an old patriarchal model that came out of the 50s where the physician, while smoking, told you what to do with your baby. You know, a doctor had the gall to tell my mom that formula was better than breast milk, right? Mm. And my mom was like, well, that seems weird, but okay, you're the doctor. Like, you know, and that's the same doctor's like, yeah, smoking makes for easy births because the babies are small. You know, like that's super weird. That was 1973. And so if we just fast forward a few years, some of this is just an artifact of the maturation of the system. But some of it is that we're realizing that we have not taught, have no structures or institutions to teach people that A, they're in charge of their fitness and wellness and health, that there is a lot of stuff on the internet and in sales and marketing trying to sell things to people that makes it confusing to really understand where to begin. So I think we're untangling a Gordian knot from multiple sides. And one of the things that I think, you know, coming back to the original piece is that a lot of people are starting to recognize that we're going to need, in order to untangle this, we're going to have to shift the responsibility and control back to people, which is what we figured out in sports all along. You know, like I work with the All Blacks and they, you know, early on the coaches take in the week, the coaches take a leading role, but then the athletes know what to do. In the end, they're coaching themselves. You know, it's the same thing I do with my daughters and their water polo. I mean, I'm like, Georgia, you can't be looking at your coach. Your coach is giving you information you can't see, but it's you and your lady friends who are running the show. And if there's not something you're getting, you guys have to communicate about that. So the whole notion of, am I passive? Is someone shouting at me and directing me? Or expert clinicianship is always a conversation and a compromise, you know, in the best sense of the word, between clinician and person.
Yeah, and I feel like it's so tough these days. A few things that you pointed out, like I think the story about your mother's, you know, kind of funny, and we can laugh at that now. Like, oh, you're the doctor, you must know best. And there's still a degree of that. Like, oh, you're the expert, you must know best. But then also there's thousands of people out there claiming to be experts. Like, do you have any recommendations for someone listening? Like, here's how you can tell if the person that is giving you advice is legit or if they're full of BS.
Yeah, that's the third rail, isn't it? If the person has abs, they're obviously legit.
They must be.
If they have lots of social media followers, look, one of the things that you can do is always keep in mind that if you have questions or it doesn't fit into your belief or your experience, that's a point of interest, right? So one of the things that I always talk about in the work that we do is when I go into, I was just at Parker Chiropractic College. So I had the entire school, there's 2000 people there like 2 weeks ago. And I'm like, look, here's a model for understanding how we look at complex human movement and how we predict and explain and repeat, right? And communicate about what it is we do. But if it doesn't drop into your understanding, let's have a conversation about that. Because ultimately, per E.O. Wilson, evolutionary biologist, evolutionary psychologist, you know, we should be driving consilience, which is the unification of knowledge. So Buckminster Fuller calls it mutually accommodating systems. That means I can watch what you all do and teach, and I understand exactly what's going on. Use different language, different tactics, different tools, but principles and first principles remain the same. And so the only thing we should really be arguing about is, you know, again, tactics or duration or, you know, like, do you bench 2 times a week or 3 times a week in the NFL? I don't know. I don't coach in the NFL, but I trust you that you do. So, you know, ultimately, when you're learning something or you see someone on the internet who's an expert, you know, look, ask yourself if they're, I think a red flag always is if they're shouting someone down or talking about their expertise as the anti something to someone else, that's usually a red flag. Mm-hmm. Because all the professionals in the world actually only either talk about what they like in other people or what they're doing or how they explain the world and their model. And they actually don't try to get attention by tearing anyone else down. There's actually no time for that. And it's a real, so it's an easy way to get followers and eyes and stir up controversy and become relevant all of a sudden. But what you'll see is that certainly is a flag that that doesn't work. So, and you should be like, curious that you're using that strategy. I wonder if you're, you have incomplete thinking or you're insecure in your beliefs.
Yes.
Second thing is, right, I think that could hold to a lot of things, right? And then second thing I would say is, are people transparent? Are you seeing their work? Because as you pointed out, it's difficult for us to really understand what's going on when you get a 15-second snippet of what someone's doing on TikTok, right? And again, I think Twitter is the obfuscates, you know, the best, where you see a lot of experts just swooping and pooping and tearing down and posturing. But I'm like, well, who do you work with? Can I see your results? Like, what teams are you working with? What people do you work with? What are, you know, are you in a national health system where always people are coming into you no matter what? Or, you know, do you work with teams? Are you, how long have you been doing it? And so really the ultimate idea is, I think, is transparency, you know, where you get to see results and process, good and bad. You know, one of the things I ask about physical therapy all the time, I'm like, well, can I see your bad results? Can I see your failed outcomes? Can I see people that didn't work with your system? And so, you know, for me, those things really end up, you know, leading my sort of radar of like, look how transparent this person is and look how they talk about other professionals around them. Those are really good indicators of if someone's legit or not.
I love that. And that's something that I hammer in for people so much as well. Now, you being an expert in the space, what was your experience with having gone under surgery and, you know, going through that whole journey? I mean, I loved that you shared the entire journey, but I think people can look at you too, like, what? He's the mobility king. Like, how did he get hurt? How did he need surgery for his knee? Can you talk to us about that? Because that was like a year ago now.
Yes. Well, I tell you, that's a perfect place to kind of discuss, you know, transparency, vulnerability, and also, do you eat your own cooking? How about that? There's a phrase around coding, which I'll get wrong, but like, do you use your own code, right? As a programmer. For the people who don't know, and you wouldn't, but a year ago, I had my knee resurfaced. And you might say total knee arthroplasty. You might say I had my knee replaced. I like to say I had my knee resurfaced because it's still my knee. It just has new shiny surfaces. Well, you know, what's interesting is that because people don't, it's difficult for someone to really know what's going on. You don't know me, you don't, you know, I try to put my training up, but it's, you can't, you know, it's easy to drop in and get a snapshot. And and here's, as an aside, one of the things you'll see real pros will do is that they'll never comment on someone's position or mechanics. They'll come on things they like, but when you see someone move and then you slam them on the internet, you have to remember you don't have any information about that person.
Yeah.
You don't know what their injury history is, what their teaching was, where they are in their training volume, what their coaching intent, unless they're trying to be super transparent about it, then you can just hammer away, right? That sucked. But, you know, recently on Twitter, someone put up a running video of an elite athlete and saying, hey, this person has this fifth metatarsal fracture that keeps coming up. What do you see in their running? And they were just kind of put it out to the world. And sure, there are some technique issues there that, you know, if you have the eye and understand what you're seeing, are glaring. But one of my best friends and I looked at this and said, immediately we're like, how can I comment on this? I don't know what the injury history is or how much volume or how much sleep or, you know what I mean? Like, there's too many things for me to say why this person's getting injured. Can I say I think that that's ineffective running technique? Yes. And that they could get faster? Yes. But why they got hurt? Ooh, like there's a lot to unpack there. So I had to have my knee replaced a year ago. I did it. And the interesting thing is on the internet, there were a lot of people who were to see were like, see, mobility doesn't work. I thought your technique, you know, was perfect. Wow. I thought, you know, is it because you keep an arch and you're, you know, when you squat or like, you know what I mean? You don't collapse your feet and turn your feet out. Is that why? And so we saw a lot of those people come up and I was like, oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
That of course people are going to come up and trash you. And, you know, and also you don't know anything about me. So, you know, how could it possibly hurt my feelings? And then there's this also this thing on the internet. I don't know if you know this, but you can block anyone who is not an adult and who does not act civilly. If you won't say something to my face on the internet, then, you know, if you, again, if there's a disparity or mismatch between those two things, then you get flicked off the platform because it's my platform. It's my little world. And you're welcome to come in and ask questions and be curious and vulnerable and talk about what you like and what's worked for you. But if you're a jerk, you're outie. So, 7 years ago, 8 years ago now, I was skiing very fast. So here's the background. I grew up racing as a kid in Europe. I skied in the Junior Olympics. I chased FIS points. I had a ski team. Again, I grew up racing in Germany. This was my like sport. I'm probably the best at skiing than any other thing. And I happened to be flying on some detuned race skis, some slalom skis. And I may or may not have been racing a stranger. And I was going about 50 or 60 miles an hour with my hip on the snow. And I just slipped out. I booted out. I just like, it's a thing that happens to skiers and snowboarders all the time. You're just railing on an edge and then you just slip. And I slipped going really fast. And all of a sudden the ski caught and I felt a little twinge in my knee. And I was like, oh, I just sprained my knee. That's too bad. You know, and I stood up and I was like, ooh, sprained my knee. My wife just goes up and I'm covered in the snow. She's like, you okay? And I was like, yeah, I think I sprained my knee. I need to go down probably end of the day. So I skied down. My knee started to swell. And needless to say, I did all the things to manage it. And eventually, about a month later, I was like, probably should get a picture of this because I'm not able to get ahead of this sprain. It's not smelling and feeling like a sprain. And remember, everyone, a really bad ankle sprain takes 4 to 6 weeks to heal. So if you're in that 4 to 6 week range and you're not making progress, then you should ask yourself, is something else going on? That's one of those things. How long does it take a really bad ankle sprain? 4 to 6 weeks. So it turns out I had destroyed my meniscus. And more importantly, I put my femur into my tibia. And I had these two what are called kissing bone lesions where I had crushed the surfaces. I was going so fast that I had these gigantic impact trauma to the surface of my femur and the surface of my tibia. And I did not tear my ACL, MCL, PCL. In fact, I had just deadlifted like 600 the day before. I was super strong. I was cleaning 360 pounds on my power, my full cleans. I was pretty bomb-proof. And what the surgeon said that day was, well, we should schedule a knee replacement because this is one of the worst knees I've ever seen. You're like, oh, I've heard that before.
Of course.
Thank you.
Heard that before.
Can I get on the wall of shame? I don't see your wall of shame. Where's the hall of fame, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, I was like, well, hey, thanks for that. And then I, you know, saw a couple other docs. Is there anything else we can do to stop this edema? Can we, you know, is there hyaluronic acid? And that really it was, I knew it was going to be a time bomb where eventually – this kind of trauma led to really bad arthritis. That's universal, but probably because of the severity of the injury, I was going to need my knee replaced. So, but I was like, whatever, I'll wait until my function gets so bad. And here's what I want people to take away from this. I didn't have my knee replaced because my knee hurt. I had my knee replaced because the things I wasn't being able to do started to add up. I kept taking things off the list. I kept being like, man, I don't want to play Frisbee. Mm. Ooh, I almost fell into this class 5 gorge because my knee gave out. Oh, my knee just turned off when I was cross country skiing. You know, I deadlift, but my knee feels sore for a couple of days afterwards. So what was starting to happen, I was pulling things off and I, you know, even mountain biking started to bug me a little bit. I could ski for a hard hour with my family on hard pack and I could ski all day on powder, you know, those kinds of things. And eventually I was like, okay, I don't want to compromise anymore. So 7 years later, after maintaining my mechanics, working in my range, modifying my motion, taking care of all that stuff, the bill came due. So I had my knee replaced.
Mm-hmm. I love what you said right at the end there. It's just like, it wasn't really the pain you know, resulted in you going to get this thing. It was the reduction in the function that was preventing you from doing the things that you loved, like really your one of your main purpose-driven things, which is having fun with your family, having adventures with your kids and your wife. Like that's the stuff that really prevented you or resulted in you going to get this thing done. So it, one of my questions, because you hear a lot of providers or the people who are, you know, more of the conservative type saying like, oh, there's always the conservative things that you can do to prevent needing to go and get a knee or a joint replacement. You really just explained well, you know, the reasoning as to why you went and the severity of the injury. Do you think there are a lot of other cases where people kind of like you did can put off getting that replacement for years, if not decades, longer than that first doctor who might tell them, oh, this is the worst joint I've ever seen, you should get it replaced?
Right. It's such a fair question. And in there, we should address the elephant in the room, which is, are we making a lot of decisions solely on pain versus no pain? Mm. And a lot of our decision-making, even a lot of our reimbursement, you know, the reason, so if we define injury, this is an even step further back. Injury is defined by Nagy Said, right? Who kind of looked at like, say, well, how do we clinically define injury? Is it a physical impairment? Is it a tissue damage? It's not those things. If you walk into a room and say, raise your hands if you're pain-free, very few hands go up. So pain is definitely very common to the human experience. And as our friend Perry Nicholson says, it's a request for change. It's information. And we've always treated pain in our clinic and in our training as information, just like your wattage was terrible today. Your poundage was terrible today. Your speed was terrible today. Oh, also you have pain. It's on that level of information about the system's functioning, right? Because if I dropped in, I work alongside, and one of my good friends is a woman named Kate Courtney, who is one of the best mountain bikers in the history of the world. She's a world champion. She's a superstar, local woman. And if I dropped into her brain in the middle of a mountain bike World Cup race, I would perish of pain. I would die. I wouldn't be able to take it. I would literally be like, kill me now. Like the pain that she goes in one of these races. So it can't just be about pain, because we know it's so subjective. And people have been managing their pain their own ways for as long as there have been people. What have they been doing? They've bourbon, opiates, I mean, you know what I mean? THC, food, drug. I mean, people self-soothe like it's their job. I mean, that is the human condition. So one of the things that I think we make a lot of statements out of is like, we should have surgery because of pain. And certainly we can have procedures because there's a target intervention we know will change someone's persistent pain and chronic pain. And that's not exactly what I'm talking about here. But when we start shifting away from pain drives everything, and you don't have any pain anymore, so you must be healed, which we know isn't true. If we start shifting everyone towards this function idea, then we start to ask different questions. You know what I mean? Because what if your knee is swollen, but you don't have pain? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what if you don't have range of motion and you can't weight bear on that leg, but you still have pain? So you see suddenly that we're making a lot of, you know, sort of weird assumptions about all of our behaviors on pain versus no pain. So when we look at some of these injuries, the conservative thing to do, when people say, let's try a conservative thing, well, it turns out that's formal strength and conditioning. And I think where we've lost the narrative a little bit is that people have been using fitness and exercise as entertainment. And we've been using like we usually say athleisure and we mean clothing, but athleisure is going to dance class. Athleisure is going to Peloton class or SoulCycle, right? Or a boot campy thing. There's hard work being done that may impact your cardiorespiratory system, but does not do anything to load you, to manage your range of motion, to be skill based. High physiology, low skill activities aren't necessarily the things I'm talking about that we need to do. So a conservative thing is, for my knee, here I have two big holes in my knee. My conservative thing is, well, I slowed my squatting down. I may change some of my range of motion. I may have changed my squat stance. I may have had to manage my swelling a little bit more, but there wasn't some secret stabilizer exercises I need to do, right? I needed to actually just train like an athlete or a human trains in formal movement of strength and conditioning. And it's confusing because we see a lot of calisthenics on the internet, which are basically like corrective exercises done with intensity, right? And that's not the same thing. That is a movement practice, great, but not necessarily what I'm talking about in terms of developing the kinds of training that people could benefit from to regress formal movement, progress formal movement. So, and with an injury, you know, sometimes it's a take two steps forward, one step back sort of thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And are there things we can do to help people have a healthier environment so their tissues are more robust? Bet your butt. So one of the things that I figured out a long time ago was that we weren't managing swelling very well in our industry. We were icing, and icing didn't manage swelling. Icing stopped the inflammatory response, but also the healing response. And icing actually made things worse because your lymphatics would become porous, and then you reinvest all of that sequestered detritus and broken down proteins that go back in to the tissues you were trying to decongest in the first place, the ice. So we started realizing, well, what drives the lymphatic system? Well, it's movement and it's compression and elevation. And we found a technique using a company called H-Wave that is a device that creates a non-fatiguing muscle contraction. And there are any NMES device, neuromuscular E-stem device, that creates a non-fatiguing muscle contraction to do the same thing, or you could walk or ride a bike. It doesn't matter. Your brain doesn't care how the muscles are contracting, but that's how we dump the lymphatics. So I think a lot of people are coming in and managing swelling with ibuprofen because that stops the healing response and stops the swelling. But meanwhile, you're still swollen. You just don't have any pressure coming down the pipe. So then what we have is an incomplete healing response and we still have swelling, right? And then we're like, don't use it for a super long time. And if we just wait 6 months, maybe you can start using it again. So our sort of traditional models of how we're handling kind of musculoskeletal problems are incomplete. And part of that's because there's such daylight between your visit and the physician and your day-to-day office, your day-to-day experience as a human, right? That doctor has 6 to 8 minutes to talk to you.
Yeah.
She probably, or they probably don't have the whole picture of your sleep and how you're managing your swelling and how you're training and who is doing your training and how you're modifying your training, right? And what should you expect? And are there cases where people haven't had to go under the knife? So we end up, you know, basically failing out of conservative rehab because we haven't done anything or we haven't done anything well, then our models to get back to function and back to, or maybe out of pain, are surgical. So what I realized, like after my surgery, was that holy moly, I needed to double down on the swelling. Yeah. And I see why people are addicted to opiates very quickly, because the pain was real and the swelling was real, but I was off of the opiates in 2 days and started squatting right away and could ride the bike faster. And when I went in for my follow-up, I wasn't on crutches and had range of motion and control. And they were like, what are you doing? What's going on? I'm like, well, I'm just managing my swelling, like, and doing some mini squats, right? And BFR. And I just used the same sets of tools that we were applying to progress people. And I applied them to my situation, which was, hey, I have this tissue I really need to just babysit and keep my nervous system engaged, and then I'll just let my body heal.
I think that's so incredibly huge. And I hope people are really getting to one. I mean, I think it's cool that you shared your whole journey so people can scroll back a year and actually go see what you did for your knee. But I think, you know, having this new mindset and framework of how we're approaching the body healing and recovery. Because, and so often I'll get DMs of like, well, what can I do? I went to physical therapy, you know, but what exercises should I do? And I'm like, but what? You went to physical therapy and you didn't move? Like, it's a lot of people, unfortunately, we still have a lot of work to do, as you've said, are going, getting touched, but not, or maybe ice and heat or ultrasound, but not getting the movement aspect. And that is what we do. That is what we help people. And what has been your experience in trying to educate people back into the getting better function and movement right away after such a severe surgery?
You know, I think if you look at your insurance, right, you're thinking, okay, I've had this surgery, and now your surgeon, they have washed their hands of you. You're done, right? surgeon has done her job. You know, I had the head of the orthopedics department at UCSF did my knee. Like I had the, he is the head of like the knee, you know, College of Medicine. He's the man. And then I walked out of there and I was on my own. And the question, and I never saw a physical therapist, and I never saw, you know, I think I got a massage eventually, just to feel better. But what I realized was like, how much of this do I think is skilled care and how much of this is unskilled care? Because really, don't get me wrong, seeing a physio is really awesome. And a physio coach is even better, as you kind of pointed out. But, you know, one of the things that you come to realize is that if you went and got, you had an, like this is in Kaiser in San Francisco, if you have an ACL surgery, you may get 3 visits with a physical therapist. I've heard of that before. And how could 3 45 minutes with a physical therapist possibly have a good outcome on your ACL, right? Your ACL healing, repair, teaching you to move, telling you what to do. Because don't get me wrong, you're an expert in 100 other domains in your life. You're a really great parent. You're really good at your job. You're a great, you know, sister. You're a great child. You're a great, you know, whatever, fill in the blank. And you've never had any education in how your body works. You didn't have anatomy and physiology. You didn't have how to eat or take care of yourself or self-soothe classes. So how could you know? You're not in a formal movement system where someone says, hey, come on in. I want to keep you in your tribe and we'll do all your rehab exercises and well body training in your group. This doesn't happen, right? If you get injured, you don't go to SoulCycle anymore. You don't go to your class anymore because you can't. So, you know, imagine, I think the biggest type one error we have in the system is that people aren't moving enough after surgery, regularly enough after surgery, and they're not managing. And there's, of course, we have to grade some movements and simplify some things, right, and unload it. But we're not also managing sort of the physiology. Are you in the Normatec boots? Are you in, you know, on an MMES device? Are you decongesting on the bike, doing an hour of zone 2 cardio every day in front of the TV because that's what it takes to decongest that thing? Are you managing your sleeping well? And what you see is, man, we have this really super complex surgery, which is incredible. It's a miracle. And then we're like, good luck. And, you know, hope your number of insurance visits. I mean, you should be seeing a physical therapist 5 days a week for an hour and a half. Because guess what? That's probably what it takes after to rehab after spine surgery. But guess what? No one has time for that. No one can not work and do that. No one is going to leave their kids and do that. No one gets paid to do that. So who's the stakeholder here? There's one stakeholder. That's you. So we better change our framework about in-home rehab so that you can touch base with the professional and that you know what to do. And that rhymes with get to work.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think that, I mean, you're touching on so many things right now that I just, it's a product of how we've treated this system of capitalized healthcare to drive people into the highest level intervention that at a system cost is massive. At your own personal cost is fairly low. And then the things, the quote, conservative care that we just have chosen to not value at all in our societal health system, it just kind of gets shat on. And we expect people to pay out of pocket for all these things if they wanted to have more than, like you said, 3 PT sessions in some cases after having a massive, you know, orthopedic surgery. So it's like, where do you think this, you know, issue gets solved? I know that, you know, that's some of the work that we do. That's what we try doing, getting information and access to the information out to people. I know that you have a app that you have out, you have different programs that you have out. Do you think that we kind of in this quote private sector of health information have the ability to make meaningful change at a system level?
Well, currently, I don't think we're gonna do it. I think we're gonna have to just sacrifice a generation of people. This is when I wake up in the middle of the night sobbing because I'm not clever enough. Look, humans are always acting in their best interest. We can count on that. And if you can give people a better system or a better solution, they will take it. It takes time to change behavior, right?
Yeah.
It takes time to change systems. So let's go back to physical therapy and not talk about surgery. Let's talk about, hey, I can no longer, I'm injured. We're talking about definition of injury. I'm injured, which means I can no longer occupy my role in society. I can't occupy my role in my family. I can't do my job. So if your back hurts so bad you can't go to work, that's a medical emergency. You need to go get help. Let me just be super clear about that. Your back hurts after a run or it's super achy, but you got to do your job. I don't know if you're injured, but you're certainly in an incident level problem where we want to make sure that we're focusing on this and taking it seriously, right? It's a fine line. Can't occupy my role in society, can't do my job. And for some of us, you know, if I'm a professional athlete or I'm a student and can't go to school or I can't do my job as a professional athlete, once again, that's an injury. So a lot of us are waiting around for our function to get so bad and our pain to get so bad that we now have an injury. And we go see our physical therapist, and the physical therapist and even the entire medical system for that matter is predicated on getting you functional enough where your pain is manageable, you're back into that incident category, and you can return to work and do your job. So that is a pretty good deal in my book. But the problem is, the next step is that is, well, did you actually improve the system? Did you actually normalize function? Well, and what you realize is that if you know you come to see me because your shoulder hurts and put your arm over your head, oftentimes we can calm that down, but we haven't changed anything. We just calmed it down. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, you still have incomplete mechanics. Your swimming still sucks. Your downward dog sucks. Your overhead jerking position sucks. And let me get this clear. It's your right to suck. If you don't care, it doesn't matter. It's totally fine. But let's not pretend that doing the minimum is the same thing as chasing potential in a person, right? Or restoring them to normative ranges or normative skills. And the problem you're seeing is that no one is talking about what should every human being be able to do? What is normative? And I talk about the dirtiest secret or the dirtiest phrase in physical therapy is within normal limits, which means you're good enough. I'm not going to get paid for this or reimbursed for this. And I'm not really set up in my clinic with carpeted floors and a hung ceiling and 2-pound pink weights to actually do anything about this, because it's no longer a physical therapy problem. It's a training problem. It's a strength and conditioning problem, which is the same thing we're doing with every person who comes to us for training, is that we're saying, hey, let's improve your metabolic systems. Let's improve your strength. Let's improve your range of motion and tolerance. Let's improve your positions, right? That's the problem, is it's a continuum. And then what we say is, well, this is all I'm going to get out of this. And we hold those people up to be the end all, end of the conversation, the alpha and the omega. So you point out that our managed healthcare system is a for-profit system. So once again, we have a type one error in the system, or think we have a foundation error, a logic error at the start. You know, John Maynard Keynes, who is the economist who sort of set up the central banking system after World War II, et cetera. If you feel like you're having a crazy conversation with me, welcome to my brain. Mm-hmm. And he talks about this rentier class, R-E-N-T-I-E-R, as people who sit and benefit from an essential service, but don't create value in that service. So the physicians, the physical therapists, they're all the people who create the value, but it's this for-profit gigantic industry that's making money and decisions about how that works top down. And people have been warning about that, again, from the start. This is in the, you know, the 40s that someone was describing this problem, or even after World War I it was described. So what we then need to think differently about is, well, where can we teach people about their musculoskeletal environmental health? And it turns out that's the trainer and the coach. If you really want to, you know, if you're interested in saying, hey, I don't think that this, it's not just about, hey, my knee doesn't hurt, now I can kind of go downstairs and get off the toilet. If that's all you care about, that's cool. But I guarantee at some point you'll probably want a little more than that.
Yeah.
And it just may be that we're taking our goldfish to our, you know, our podiatrist. We're taking our car to our orthodontist. Like, it's the wrong system. And so one of the things that we realize is that, well, who has 3 to 5 contact hours a week with people? And that's the trainer at YMCA. That's the coach at Equinox. That's the Peloton instructor. So we're going to have to think differently about where that begins, and also where people start to interact with this information for the first time. And that may be in middle school. That may be in elementary school.
So how do you recommend someone who is going, maybe going to get the same surgery that you did and want to have the same kind of outcome and the mobility and getting back to function as well? How do you suggest they go about their journey then?
They want to be deadlifting 400 pounds a few months out.
Okay.
Oh, no, no. I deadlifted 575 at week 16. There's a very difference. I did backflips, right? Because, you know, first of all, you know, I think one of the things that we try to do with all everyone we work with who is having an experience like this or a similar experience or a lateral experience is say, what does success look like for you? How will you know if your rehab is complete? You know, I was at a big conference at Fort Bragg with the military and the Army, and we had all of the tier one people there and all of the nurses and doctors and trainers and coaches. This woman said, hey, we've recently had a patient who meets all the discharge criteria for after tearing her ACL, but she's afraid to go to work. What do you think? And I was like, that's failed rehab. You failed her. Her brain is telling her this is unsafe still. That means you haven't had a graded behavioral exposure enough for her to feel like she can go play basketball again. Yeah. Welcome to failed outcomes, right? And everyone was like, whoa, what? But she can jump so far, stand on one leg, you know? And I was like, she doesn't believe she can. Well, you think there's not a nervous system and a psychology attached to all this?
Yeah.
So what I'd say is, you know, what does your outcome look like? So if it's an outcome is like, hey, I just want to be able to get up and down out of bed. They're like, okay, well, you know, you're going to be fine. If it is, I want to ride my bike again. I want to ride my bike with my friends at the same pace. I want to be able to generate 2000 watts in a sprint with my friends, right? Then we need to just start working backwards from that exposure. And what you're going to find is if you took you 4 weeks to get an appointment with your physical therapist and she can't see you, but once a week, or you're getting 2 half-hour sessions and punted down to a PT aide who's having you do straight leg raises, there should be some dissonance there where you're like, I'm not sure this is going to get me to where I need to go, which means we may need to opt out of that a formal system. We may need to go see a coach and a trainer. We may have to do some more research. And that's, you know, look, we try to be as transparent as we can. And one of the things we did was we created a total knee replacement protocol on the ready state. Because I was like, hey, I think we can do better. Let me show you what's worked. And here are these principle-based interventions where we can begin to shift that back up. But what you're going to see is, man, my return to function, eventually after my knee and my stitches are out and I'm healed and I'm just having to protect, anyone can say, well, there's no jumping and running for, you know, until 12 weeks. Okay. Well, then there's a lot of squatting and bridging and biking to be done and intervals to be done in that thing. Where are you going to do all that? You know, what we've traditionally done is waited out long enough where we get beyond a surgical protocol timeline. And then we're like, good luck. Right. Mm-hmm. And that is a failure of the system to be able to scale up. Theoretically, there should be no difference and distance between your squat rack and the treatment table. So if you walk into if you're a person who has this choice, walk into your clinic and be like, where do you train athletes here? You know, or you walk into your local CrossFit gym and you're like, where are the physical therapists here? And find a place where those things are happening concurrently. And you're more likely to have the kind of outcome that it's going to help you meet the goals you've already set.
Love that.
Just everything that, I mean, I think it's so valuable that everything that you're pushing towards is function driven, which then is going to drive someone's purpose. And again, how can we achieve that through the system, you know, rather than looking at the stupid little numbers that, you know, the insurance company might need to see, or the jump distance, the single leg balance. We need to continue to teach people to drive themselves into the function that will help them continue to live purposeful lives and focus less on those other little metrics.
I want everyone to hear that the bar is low. The bar is set at, can you get back to your daily living and getting out of the car and off the toilet? That's where the bar is. So anything that you want to do above that is going to be extra credit, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, when my surgeon says things like, I didn't know the knee could do that, you know, I'm like, wow. How could I possibly be the first person to want to do this or to be able to express this? You know,
yeah.
I can sit ass to ankle. I can power clean 100 kilos, no problem. I can deadlift heavy. I can run, you know, and people are like, how are you kneeling on your knee? And I'm like, kneeling on my knee? You know, that's what we're worried about, kneeling? Like, come on, there's a lot we can do there. And what we see is that we have to lift everyone's bar a little higher prior to these things. We need to walk more. We need to sleep more. We need to eat more whole foods. There's a lot of basics that we need to do to get people to base camp before we talk about which route is up Everest.
Yeah. No, so true. And again, we just appreciate being able to watch you, being able to watch you on the platform, be transparent about your whole journey through this, be transparent about your information. I mean, the information that you just have as you scroll through the Ready State, everyone's got to go check out the Ready State on Instagram. It's like you said, you put it all right out there for people to be able to consume. It's, I'm sure, a lot of similar stuff that you can find in your different platforms and programs, which again, you can find right there on the Ready State. You can check out the app, which is the Ready State Virtual Mobility Coach, I believe.
That's right. Correct? We've got the Virtual Mobility Coach. That's a great place to start on a journey of understanding yourself. That's really what this is all about.
Amazing. Where else can people learn? Where do you recommend them going to right now to start to get back to that functional space?
Physical therapy school. No, I'm just kidding. Honestly, a really good place to do is follow anyone that you respect and follow their thinking. Follow them all around. They will point you at the people that they associate with that have a different view or a different tactic, you know, and those people, we all point at each other. I don't think everyone realizes that, like, a lot of us are friends and a lot of us like each other's stuff and look at everything that we put up, and we're all in kind of a big community, and you can actually see, you're like, oh boy, the Doc Jen and co likes these people. We'll go over here. And, you know, we are at the Ready State, and that's just our expression of how we think we need to try to get, you know, help people understand how their bodies work.
And you do an incredible, incredible job at that, Kelly. I mean, every single video, I'm always impressed with the way that you're able to condense information down, make it very knowledgeable, but easy to understand and be able to access. You're continuing to bring it to people, and we appreciate it so much. You're leading the way, you always have, and we're just so honored that you continue to come back and want to chat with us too.
Well, I don't know if I'm the first repeat guest, but I definitely want to be the first three-peat guest. So just keep that in mind.
The three-peat. You know, I just have to...
I'm not competitive, but...
not at all, man. And I have to share one little thing. I mean, Jen and I have both said this, like, you've kind of been that mentor from afar to us initially because you were pushing the boundaries, you know, getting it all out there. And it was, I think, going into the 2019 year, I wrote down on, like, my list of to-dos, you know, for the next year. I'm like, start a podcast. And I wrote down a list of guests on there, and your name was one of the first names that I wrote down. And it's kind of that full circle thing that was so cool the first time we interviewed you. And now the second time, it's just like, man, that's one of those things that if you just write it down and continue to drive with that intention, it'll hit you right in the face eventually.
Well, that is an amazing thing to hear. And I'm grateful and deeply humbled. And also, you need to maybe have a little higher bar yourself.
Because, you know, yeah.
Right. You know, I want to talk to Brad Pitt, you know what I mean?
I suppose we can shoot for the stars now that we've gotten to the second or third floor or so.
Right.
I'll take it. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you, Kelly. Kelly is just so cool, and we are always so grateful to have him on the podcast. I hope you go check out all of his stuff. He's really delivering such great information to really help people. Same as what I'm trying to do, right? We're all just trying to get people to move and feel a little bit better in their bodies. Now, if you enjoy our episodes, you like tuning in, please subscribe. We have so much education that always comes out on Mondays, and another interview with an epic guest every Wednesday. And if you can, just leave us a little review. We so appreciate those reviews and those rates. They just help us to be able to be seen by so many more people so that we can continue to spread this message of empowerment into the body.